This episode of the South Sea Folk Podcast is sponsored by Alice and Ivy South Sea. They're an independent skincare, makeup and wellness specialists, and they're based on Marmion Road and are open Tuesdays to Saturdays. You can find out all the information about them on social media. I love the fact that they're an independent shop that sells independent products from independent businesses around the UK. What's not to love? Give them a follow and try and find out a bit more about them. Hello and welcome to South Sea Folk Podcast, hosted by me, Lou, and
Kev.
For each episode, we will be meeting with guests in and around the local areas to talk about culture, arts, events, businesses, and much more.
So, let's see who we have on the show.
We've got Ken Brown here from Square Roots Promotions and Harbour Records in Emsworth. So, thanks for meeting us, Ken.
It's okay. Nice to meet you both.
It's a nice Sunday morning. It's been raining a little bit, but hopefully the sun will come out.
Yes, I hope so. I need some customers.
So can you tell listeners what is your story then?
My story started, musically started probably about 10 years ago. And I'm a big Stacey Earle fan. She's a singer-songwriter. She's the sister of Steve Earle. You must have heard of Steve Earle, a big country singer.
Yeah.
She was doing a tour around the UK, but she wasn't coming anywhere near Portsmouth. So I decided, in my wisdom, that I'd like to try and put on a gig for her. So I phoned up the agent and said, can I do a gig? I've never done it before. Can I do it? And he said, yes, of course you can. And I ended up putting Stacey Earle on at the RMA Tavern, the little room at the RMA Tavern in Eastney, because it's not there anymore now, is it?
Oh, okay.
And it went really well. It sold out. Amazingly, so I just thought, I'll carry on doing a little bit more. And so the next time I did another show, and this time I decided to actually put a name to it, so I decided to call myself Square Roots Promotions. And that was because I had a walk around the seafront, came across the square tower, went in there, saw the guy that was running it, which was Steve Hender. Asked Steve if I could put a music gig on there, and he was really enthusiastic about it. So decided to put on another gig there. And the second gig was with an American singer-songwriter called Otis Gibbs. And my wife was horrified because she said, no one's heard of him. No one will turn up. And so what I did is I printed a load of flyers and I walked all around South Sea and all of Old Portsmouth putting flyers through people's doors. And it sold out, which was amazing. And that's kind of like how it all started, really,
yeah,
with Square Roots Promotions. And so we've kind of like, we've grown from, we use lots of different venues. So we'll do Square Tower, which is 100 capacity. We do lots of nice little small intimate gigs like the Corner Collective,
yeah,
Wedgwood Rooms, the Edge of the Wedge. I use the main venue at the Wedge. I've used Church in Southsea. I use the studio in Petersfield. And I've also done a couple at the Guildhall as well. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's great fun. Yeah, it's hard work, but great fun.
Yeah. I love that.
That's fantastic. So here we are in the record store in Emsworth, and it's fantastic as you got it laid out, and weren't we, how like pretty much every inch is covered.
Yeah, I am a bit OCD, so it's got to look, I am a little bit like that. It's got to look right as well, isn't it?
I think it looks great.
Yeah. First impressions count, don't they?
They do indeed. And you were just telling us that story about like holidaymakers coming in and walking in, and it's almost like walking into a time capsule, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you get that all the time. I had a lady came in the other day and she said to me, she said, I haven't got a vinyl player. She said, but I thought I'd just come in for the experience.
Yeah.
And she just walked around and she was going, this is amazing, this is amazing. And then she walked back out again without buying anything.
Oh, yeah.
And you have, and you buy records off the public as well, don't you?
Yeah, literally. We do a mixture of new and used.
Yeah.
But all of our used vinyl comes from what people actually bring into the shop. So we don't do eBay, we don't do car boot sales or anything like that. It's all organic. It's what people bring in and sell to us. And obviously we supplement that with new albums as well. So we do new releases and classic albums, you know. Dark Side of the Moon, Rumours, that their albums that sell constantly all the time.
What's been the most interesting record someone's brought in?
Oh, the most interesting record. Well, the kind of like one of the holy grails of record collectors is the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon, but it's got a solid blue triangle on the label.
Okay.
And up until about 3 months ago, both Rob and I, because it's Rob Moore and myself that run the shop, Rob and I had never ever seen one before. We'd heard about it, and then they're around about, they go for about £1,000, £1,200, something like that. And every time a Dark Side of the Moon comes in, we religiously check it. No, oh, very disappointed, haven't seen it. Anyway, we bought a big collection, and there was a Dark Side of the Moon in there, but we didn't bother to check it. So we bought this collection and we were putting all our doubles, because we've got a stock room out the back where we keep all the doubles. And we were going through the Pink Floyd, and I pulled out the Dark Side of the Moon and I said to Rob, have you checked this? And he went, oh, no, I haven't bothered. I went, oh, well, I'll just check it. And I pulled it out of the sleeve, and there it was, the solid blue triangle. And I just went, is that what I think it is? And he went, yeah, I think it is. And yeah, so we actually got one when we weren't even expecting it. And it's there up on the wall, up at the top right-hand corner.
Wow.
And there it is.
That's cool. Like when you get those gems. Wow, that must be really cool.
Yeah, it is nice. And me, I've got such a wide musical taste that I love everything. I love everything. Because I grew up in the mid-70s, so I was like glam rock, punk rock, heavy rock, and kind of like everything, really. There's not a lot of music that I don't really like. Mm-hmm. And, of course, working in the shop, I get to play whatever I like. It's not really a job, is it?
Yeah.
It's
not. But yeah, you're doing what you love.
Yeah, talking to people about music all day is not really much of a job, is it?
But you can see your eclectic taste, even like me, as I've been searching through some of your CDs and records and some of the bands and artists and times I've grown up in, and it's really like refreshing to see that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that every record store is what I'm about to say, but a lot of the times I go in the record stores, it's the same sort of things, it's the same kind of era.
Yeah.
But you do have a very good...
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, collection here going on.
Yeah, someone said to me once, and it's not necessary for record, not necessarily specific to record shops, but any shop really. And you'll probably know this with the Corner Collective. It's the shop is a reflection of your personality, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you know, shop's neat and tidy. I'm OCD, obviously.
You can see that even with your window layout.
Yeah,
everything is symmetrical.
A3 posters in the window. If someone asked me to put an A4 poster, it's not happening.
No.
It's not happening.
I love how you really love like your music, but you're very knowledgeable. Like, you know, we had a song on in the Corner Collective. We were talking about an artist, and then... You know, Ken just turned around and said, well, you know, this happened, that happened. This...
Giorgio Moroder, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Fark was said about, that showed me the Giorgio piece that he'd done, which was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Really jealous that someone else has got it.
Yeah.
But it was funny because that day I said to him about, oh, have you heard a song called Son of My Father, written by Giorgio Moroder? And I went, the actual band, it's from the mid-70s, the band is called Chicory Tip, and the actual video, the promo video, was shot on South Sea Seafront. If you look it up on YouTube, and he did look it up on YouTube, didn't he?
Yeah, and he was blown away by that, because it's one of his favourite artists, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then he loves seagulls, and then he did this for the music exhibition we were doing. That was his we asked artists to think about their favourite album cover, an album that has resonated with them, whether it was their favourite album or it was just something that reminded them of that time.
Yeah.
And then Fark picked that out. That was his choice. So.
What would be yours, Ken?
What, my favourite album?
Favourite album cover.
My favourite album cover. We've already talked about it this morning. I really like the London Calling Clash cover, because it is based on the first Elvis Presley album, but it's such an iconic image, isn't it? Paul Simonon smashing that bass guitar, instantly recognisable.
Yeah.
And I did actually get there was a Clash exhibition. This was not the most recent one, the one before that, which was in Soho, and this is probably about 8 years ago. And it was done over three floors of a shop, and the smashed up guitar was actually in a case. You can actually see it, you know, it's all broken and everything, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Such an iconic picture as well.
It is, yeah, definitely.
But there are so many good album covers, you know. Lots of the psychedelic stuff from the '60s is just weird as anything. Mm. And lots of the even the '70s and eighties and nineties garage rock stuff, some of the covers are absolutely amazing. And lots of the soul and funk albums, some of them are unbelievable, but they're all pieces of art in their own right, aren't they?
Of course, yeah. They are.
Well, we were saying that when I did the music exhibition, we were saying that actually, how everything is downloaded now, that the album cover had been really diluted because it used to be such a big thing, but now bands are really bringing that back because they know it really adds to their record sales, and now we've got this real resurgence of LPs again, people want to buy them again. So it is actually all, you know, the artwork, you're not just what you open, you were saying this, weren't they, but the inside sleeve, the artwork, and the lyrics and how everything's really thought through.
You want to read about it, don't you? You want to read about how the album was made, you know, want to hear what the band have said. And
well, that's why I asked when we came in and I was searching for the vinyls and you had
the Slipknot
album, and I asked to have a look at it because it was the red vinyl one, and I've got a couple of limited edition Slipknot vinyls myself, being a big fan. But what I love about CDs and the vinyls, especially the vinyls, is you bring it, you know, you've got the inlays and it's got all the lyrics and it's got the additional photography and some have behind the scenes. What takes me back is the first CD I ever bought, you have it, it's Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah, great.
And I remember just like my first experience was taking out the booklet, unwrapping it, and it had, I think it had the lyrics in it, but it had all of the photos of the bands. Like sometimes it'd be in the recording studios and that. But as they kind of progressed, I got a real thing for like the smell of the ink on the paper.
Yeah.
Some of the bands were experimenting with different forms of paper, different materials to use in their artwork.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. And I suppose with that in mind and talking about streaming, why do you think people are coming back to it? Especially when in such a modern world we live in with technology and with some of the big streaming platforms, which you can access pretty much most songs ever written or ever recorded at anywhere, anytime, on any device. Why do you think people still come back to vinyl, CD, tape?
It's the physical aspect. It's the it's the tactility of it, isn't it? And we found in the shop that we're having kids as young as 10 and 11 years old coming in, and maybe they might not be buying vinyl for the first time, they might buy a CD. We sell secondhand CDs as well. They might buy a secondhand CD, which is £4. Now for them, rather than having it playing it on Spotify or even downloading it, they don't actually own that music, do they? If they buy a CD or if they buy vinyl, they own that music, don't they? It's a physical thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. It's you actually owning the music now. And plus as well, if you pick up an album cover, it's just like we just said, it's fantastic artwork. There's lots in there for your money, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah.
Not only have you got the music and you own that music and you're always going to own that music, if your phone crashes or, you know, your stuff that you've downloaded is gone, you've always got your vinyl, you've always got your CD.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, CDs are going out. They're not. CDs aren't going out. It's still going. People are still buying CDs. People are still buying secondhand CDs. They're still buying new as well, which is great.
I'm glad I didn't get rid of my CD collection now.
See, I did, but I kept two. I kept Deftones Around the Fur, 1997 that came out, and the album that changed it all for me was Offspring Smash in 1994.
Yeah, great album, yeah.
And I was telling my son about this recently because we were listening to music through one of the services, one of the devices we have, and I said, wait here, and I ran upstairs and I brought it down and I said, have a look at that. And he went, what's that? And I said, this is a CD. I said, we've just asked a brand to play it, and it played in seconds. So, but to get that album in that summer, it was massive, and I had to pre-order it at HMV, Commercial Road, and I grew up in Lee Park, and I had to wait 3 weeks, and then once it was in stock, me and my mates had to get a bus, an hour and a half down to Commercial Road, then the time it took to go get it, hour and a half to come back.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much most of the day had gone before we had even listened to it.
Yeah.
And I listened to it four times. And I never will get rid of that album.
It's funny you say that, because, like, obviously you're a lot younger than me, but one of my early experiences was very similar to yours, but the fact that I'd gone down to my local Western Heart, which then turned into HMV, and I had to order the Sex Pistols single God Save the Queen because they wouldn't stock it, so I had to order it, and then it came in a week later, and then I had to get the bus down there to pick it up, and then I said to the lady at the counter, oh, you know, I've come to pick up a single, and she said, oh, which one is it? And I went Sex Pistols God Save the Queen, and she actually said to me, she goes, that's disgusting, I don't know how you can listen to such rubbish, you know. And then she gave me a single because I'd bought it, and like you, kept the bus home and just kept on playing it all the time. It was great.
I love that.
Yeah.
I for me, it was like my sister's 6 years older than me, and she was around the time, you know, Human League brought out the Dare album.
Yeah.
And just sitting and looking at that. Oh, and it still stays with me now, you know. I remember this Cream cover and bright blue and, just that feeling of opening it and looking inside.
Well, the 80s are having a really big resurgence at the moment, isn't it? The 80s.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years ago, I noticed in the shop, you couldn't give it away, the 80s stuff. Really couldn't.
Really?
Now everyone wants it. It's not particularly valuable, you know, £5, £6, £7 an album, but it's just had such a resurgence. I think a lot of, you know, like our kids, I think, oh, actually, there were some really good songs in the 80s, and there were some good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, things like Frankie Goes to Hollywood, some of the stuff that they were doing was groundbreaking at the time.
Mm-hmm. Didn't realise it.
Pet Shop Boys, still going.
Yeah. Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
Cure.
Oh, Depeche Mode, yeah.
I clocked it here, because I'm a big fan of the 80s, and I clocked it straight away, actually, when we came to the county, and you were Extend the 80s Pop. There you go, Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah, like 8-minute versions of Relax. How good is that?
I love that.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
And Wham do a 6 minute song, and it's like a whole, I love that, I love it.
I should be so lucky, Extended. I didn't even know they did an extended
one. No, neither did I.
But do you think, like, Rick Astley's just done Glastonbury, and he was saying in an interview before he was going to Glastonbury, he was like, I'm just not cool. And his set at Glastonbury was one of the favourite, one of the best sets of the whole thing.
It was fun, wasn't it?
And then now, it's like he's got this new found coolness, and, you know, people just so love him. And yet in the 80s, some of his songs, you know, they're all right, but I mean, but he actually has got a really good voice, and he's a really good performer, isn't he?
Yeah, and he can play as well.
Yeah.
I think that's what a lot of people didn't realise, that he could actually play. And like he said, when he did that, he said, one of the first songs he listened to was AC/DC, and that's the song that he did, wasn't it? Highway to Hell.
You know,
Rick Astley likes AC/DC. What's going on there?
Yeah. I loved it halfway through that set. He goes off and he gets his hair dryer and he just blow dries his quiff a little bit. Everybody loved that. And then he came back off
singing
again. That
was great, wasn't it? That was good.
I loved that. Oh, that's cool.
Did you see him do the Smiths thing with the Blossoms as well?
I saw him do a little bit. Yeah, very cool.
That was really good. Very good. Yeah. I think he's sung better than Morrissey. Yeah, I've said it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got the record shop, and then you've got the intimate gigs that happen around Portsmouth.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say to you is, like, when I spoke to you before, these fabulous little intimate gigs, you get to see some amazing musicians in an intimate setting. So if somebody's not been to a Square Roots Promotions gig before, and they quite fancy it, what is the best way of them getting a ticket? Because they sell really quickly,
they do. 9 times out of 10, they do sell out, luckily, and that's because we've got a lot of good people, regulars, who don't come all the time but come to a lot of the gigs. So we've got a website, which is www.squarerootspromotions.co.uk. They can find us on Facebook at Square Roots Promotions. They'll find it if they look on Facebook. We were on Instagram as at Square Roots Prom. We're on Twitter, although I don't know for how much longer I'll be on Twitter. I don't know.
Are you going to move over to Threads?
It's a pond, isn't it, Twitter? It really is a pond, isn't it? There's lots of low life in there, isn't
there?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Very toxic.
Yeah, I'm trying to get thrown off, but I haven't thrown me off yet.
So out of, like, all the gigs that you've done, the intimate ones, have you got one that's up there as a favourite?
Yes, I have actually, yeah. And we did it in the tea tray with Fark, and it was a real off-the-cuff thing as well, because I'd been contacted by he was a Grammy Award nominee in America. He's a singer-songwriter called Andrew Juhon. Absolutely amazing singer-songwriter. So he's actually had two Grammy nominations for two of his albums. And he was coming over, but he didn't give me much notice. And I said, look, I might be able to do a small one. And that actually was the first one that we ever did in the tea tray. And we'd been going in the tea tray for it. And got chatting to Fark and just said, look, I've got this idea. Can we have it? I said, we'll have it in the front of the cafe. I think we can get 40, 45 seats out if we're lucky. And you went, yeah, brilliant, let's try it. And that was it. So it was real. It was surreal because we had this, you know, he's such a talented songwriter. And he came in and did the gig and everyone loved it. And we just, from there, we carried on doing all of the intimate gigs. So it's got to be that one. And Fark had done a poster in his style.
Yeah.
And we sold those as limited edition posters. I've still got them. It did a great poster as well.
Oh, wow.
And again, it sold out. And from there, that was really where the small intimate gigs started, really, with that one. And then we carried on. Well, I think it was the other day, me and my wife Donna, we were trying to work out how many gigs we'd actually done in the tea tray, and we got up to, I think we'd done about 19 in there. I didn't even realise we'd done that many.
Wow.
But by the time, because some of the artists, they would sell out. I knew they would sell out 45 tickets, so we'd do two dates in there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great for the artists as well, because they can stay down locally. Two sold out shows in a lovely little venue. It's, you know, it's great.
I love that moment in the Corner Collective when you had the Hanging Stars, and to be so close to them. And you were saying earlier that they, you know, what are they going to be doing? They really are, they're well thought
over,
of,
yeah,
aren't they?
They're going over into the big Americana Music Association, but the US version of it, mm-hmm. in Nashville. And it's huge. It's absolutely huge.
Yeah.
Got lots of music industry people go there as well. They're such a good band.
Yeah, they are.
They're such a good band, yeah. We've got them playing again in October, but that's in the Wedgwood Rooms. That's a full electric band. Shame we couldn't do a full electric band in the Corner Collective, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is kind of, nice sort of acoustic. But I guess it's nice for them in a way, because there were just two of them that night.
Yes.
Is there normally five?
Yeah, normally a five-piece band, drummer, pedal steel, bass. Yeah. Two guitar players.
Yeah.
But,
They just got to chill out and do a bit of an acoustic set.
Well, again, same thing. Well, we did two nights, didn't we?
Yeah.
And originally we were just going to do one night, and it sold out in 2 hours, I think. We just put it out to our mailing list and put it on Facebook, and it sold out in 2 hours. So I spoke to Rich and went, do you want to do another one? Because it's just sold out. So, because we had people saying, oh, can we have tickets? And I'm going, no, sorry, it's sold out. So we added another one, and that took slightly longer. That took a day to sell out. So that was great.
So, yeah, well, we've really enjoyed you coming, being on the podcast.
It's been lovely talking to you both.
Thank you very much. And just for our audience, where can they find you?
They can find us in Harbour Records in Emsworth, which is in the High Street. We're open 6 days a week. Tuesday to Sunday, 10 till 5 and 10 till 4 on a Sunday. We're closed on a Monday. Emsworth is a lovely place to come and visit. You've got a harbour, lots of really nice little cafes, lots of nice little pubs as well, and the best record shop. I always say to people, the best thing about Emsworth, you've got a record shop and Heidi's the bakery. What more do you need?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you very much, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode. Be sure to check out our previous episodes via our website at www.southseafolk.uk, and the podcast episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Google, and many more.
Until next time, take care.